Welcome to episode 3 of Coaster Redux. My name is Eric and I'm a lifelong roller coaster enthusiast, but up until lately I've been kind of a lazy one. Through high school and college in the late 90s and early 2000s, I was a full-on coaster nerd. Then I graduated from college, entered the working world, and I went on a lengthy hiatus, only visiting parks every few years. I did get to a few new parks between 2014 and 2018, and though those visits were years apart, I did start to slowly rekindle my coaster riding flame. Now after the pandemic and getting back into following the amusement industry more closely through podcasts and social media, I'm getting ready to head out on my first week-long road trip to visit 4 of the best parks in the country and knock several top-tier coasters off my bucket list. I've never done anything like this before, but it's time to get back out there. This is the story of my revived roller coaster fandom, and if you haven't already done so, please go back and listen to the first 2 episodes since I'll be picking up here from where I left off. I know as a roller coaster fan that one of my favorite parts of the hobby is getting the reaction of somebody coming off a ride they've never ridden before. That's what I want to share with you. And with that, let's launch into the 3rd episode of Coaster Redux.
Lap bars, hands up high, brakes off, dispatch ready, go. Coaster Redux.
So in fall of 2021, with new coasters open in Florida as the pandemic started to wane, I was starting to get that itch to get back on some new roller coasters, and I couldn't put off scratching it anymore. Universal had just opened Jurassic World Velocicoaster, and being an Intamin fan, that ride alone was enough to get me back up to Orlando. I also still needed to ride Hagrid's Magical Creatures Motorbike Adventure, another Intamin launched coaster, albeit more on the family-friendly side. I also had never been to SeaWorld Orlando, and since I had not been on a single roller coaster ride since 2018, I figured why not add their 3 B&Ms to my count. This would be my first time traveling since the start of the pandemic, and I really needed the escape, so I packed up my car, got on Florida's Turnpike, and headed north. Approaching SeaWorld, Mako was the first ride that was visible. Its beautiful purple airtime hills and towering lift contrasted against the blue Florida sky. The front entrance to the park features a lagoon with a wave-making machine to make it look like a hidden ocean cove. Manta is right there when you walk in, but I bypassed the flyer and headed further back. I wanted to ride Kraken first. I figured Mako would be my favorite coaster in the park, so I didn't want to start with that. This was a perfect day to visit since the park was practically empty. Kind of like King's Dominion, it was almost too empty. Kraken was running one train, and even still it was a walk-on. I opted for the back row, lowered the familiar B&M over-the-shoulder restraint. Time for my first coaster in about 3 years. Kraken was fun and forceful. The straight drop was something different on a B&M looper. The inversions were powerful and relatively smooth. There was a good snap through the zero-G roll, and I liked the second vertical loop in a trench. Kind of reminded me of Montu. Next stop, Mako. This coaster was only running one train, yet I think I only waited 1 or 2 cycles before boarding. I chose the back row first. I had pretty low expectations for this ride going in. The last 2 B&M Hypers I'd ridden were mediocre at best. Light floater airtime, nothing overly impressive. The hologram sharks projected overhead chased the train out of the station, and I was off up the 200-foot lift hill with nothing but that minimalist clamshell lap bar holding me into the comfy easy chair seat. The train quickly ascended the 200-foot lift hill, and then there was that drop. Yeah, it was my first big drop in 3 years, and it was such an incredible feeling to be yanked downhill in the back row. I started laughing hysterically. 3 years of stress left my body before I was flung up into a sharp overbank turn to the left. It was whippy and there was some floater there. Then came the airtime. I guess B&M did their homework over the last few years because the airtime on Mako is sublime. It's not as powerful as Intamin's, but it's strong floater. Some YouTubers call it Flojector, and it's sustained throughout the entire hill. The hammerhead turnaround is a great moment, then there's a slightly trimmed airtime hill that's still fun, followed by a right-hand bank turn leading into a speed hill, which is not as tall as the others but more elongated to give a sustained airtime moment, and it doesn't disappoint. You then hit the mid-course brakes, followed by a graceful whippy twisting finale over the lagoon. What a great ride! Mako absolutely delivered what my previous B&M Hyper experiences did not. I rode this thing over and over again that day. I like the back for the pull over the first drop, but I think the airtime is a little stronger in the front on the rest of the elements. Mako is a piece of purple parabolic perfection. Then there was Manta. These flyers are just okay in my book. I think this one had a better layout than Superman at Great Adventure. Its strongest moment for sure is the pretzel loop with those strong positive G's on your back. The theming is way better than Superman, though. This ride flies around rockwork, water features, and tunnels. I left SeaWorld satisfied and looking forward to the next day at Universal. I couldn't wait for VelociCoaster. I stayed at the DoubleTree right across the street from the entrance to Universal, which I would highly recommend if you're visiting the area. It was a bit of a hike the next morning, but I opted to walk to Islands of Adventure from the hotel. The park was decently crowded. Hulk was showing a 15-minute wait, so I jumped in line for that as the first ride of the day. This was the first time I had ridden it since the track was replaced, and it's running pretty well. It's not as smooth as some of the other B&Ms, but that launch into the zero-G roll is still a great element. The rest is typical B&M goodness, and this would be my only ride on this for the day. I left Marvel Superhero Island and entered Toon Lagoon on the way back to ride VelociCoaster. Both Popeye and Bluto's Bilge-Rat barges and Dudley Do-Right's Ripsaw Falls are awesome water rides, but I found myself wondering how long this island will keep its current theme. How many younger kids are familiar with the classic characters who call this island home? Universal does an incredible job with the transitions between lands in this park, and there is no mistake upon entering Jurassic Park. I passed through the Discovery Center, which is a dead ringer for the building from the first movie, except here it's jam-packed with visitors. Exiting the Discovery Center, there's a clear visual transition as you leave Jurassic Park and enter Jurassic World. The colors change from the reds, greens, and tans of the original franchise to the more neutral tones of the newer one. The entry plaza for VelociCoaster is amazing. You can essentially walk under the entire second half of the ride. The top hat is right there, then the zero-G stall holds riders upside down for a hot second right over the midway. There's a double helix with a wave turn and a weird outer bank transition akin to the one on Twisted Timbers. While the train barrels through the Mosasaurus roll and then into the double up into the brakes, it looks almost cartoonishly fast. The hype for VelociCoaster from the enthusiast community was over the top. So many people were raving about this new ride being the complete package and a contender for best coaster in the world. I mean, it features immersive theming combined with a unique ride experience filled with airtime, two great launches, and the Mosasaurus roll, the heartline roll taken low above the water. The hype factor couldn't have been higher. Would VelociCoaster live up? Only one way to find out. I entered the single rider line for my first ride. The queue is brilliant, with Mr. DNA and Dr. Henry Wu giving you an orientation to Jurassic World and the ride's locker system. It definitely sets the tone for the ride. I really appreciated how they worked the double-sided lockers into the attraction so you could have your phone with you through most of the line. It's really easy to use, and I hope more parks invest in this type of system going forward. For my second ride, the single rider line was closed, so I got to go through the entire queue, which was well worth it in and of itself. The Raptor animatronics were outstanding, with details like moving eyes and compressed air being blown through the nostrils, and the projection on the windows of the Raptors chasing the train as it launches is amazing. The showroom with Claire Deering and Owen Grady right before boarding is very well done. Classic Jurassic franchise. Let's build a park with dinosaurs. Let's put a roller coaster in the Raptor paddock. What could go wrong? Before you know it, you're approaching the load platform. I was assigned row 10, close to the back, so that's good. Here we go. The trains are amazing. The seats are comfortable, and the lap bars are about as unobtrusive as you can get. You sit high off the floor, and everything feels really open and free. A shout out to operations. Universal is crushing it. These trains are loaded, checked, and dispatched as quickly as possible. My overall wait for that first ride was about 45 minutes. Not too shabby. We're rolling forward now. Here it comes. You turn into the launch track and the train pauses, then backs up a few feet and pauses again. Any second now, hope it lives up to the hype. 4,700 feet of track, 4 inversions, and 2 minutes later, I slammed into the brakes like a T-Rex being chomped by a Mosasaurus. Breathless, speechless, the first half was a blur. Twisting through the rockwork with one ejector pop after another was spectacular. There was airtime in those first 2 inversions like I'd never experienced. Then there's that second launch. The pitch up into the top hat is right there, yet we're still accelerating. It feels like you're almost going too fast. Then VelociCoaster goes ballistic, rising vertically and cresting the top hat before whipping the back of the train down towards the ground. You hang for what seems like an eternity in the zero-G stall, then enter that twisting section reminiscent of Intimidator 305. Snappy transitions, solid airtime, even some sideways airtime on the mini wave turn. Then it's a quick speed hill and into the Mosasaurus roll. No amount of YouTube hype can prepare you for this element. How did they do that? It's not hang time, it's ejector airtime, and it lasts forever. When you see this element from off the ride, it's taken at such speed that you would think if you blink you would miss it. Let me tell you, you won't blink, and you can't miss it. This is without a doubt the best inversion on any roller coaster I've ever ridden, and what makes VelociCoaster so special is that it starts off super strong, and then every element seems to continue to build. Every moment is more powerful than the last. It's like a symphony building to a final crescendo. I've never ridden a roller coaster that accomplished that. I never thought VelociCoaster would utterly smash my already high expectations. This roller coaster delivered in every possible way, and on that day, I had my new number one. Well, now what? Guess it's time to ride Hagrid's, the family coaster that had opened 2 years prior, and wasn't enough by itself to get me to come up for a ride. The wait was posted at 120 minutes. That can't be worth it. I took the Hogwarts Express over to Universal Studios to get a ride in on Rip Ride Rocket. Wow, that got really rough since I last rode it. One and done. Then Revenge of the Mummy was a walk-on, so I grabbed two rapid-fire rides on that. I always love this ride. It has solid launches and airtime, and the overall theme is great. Lastly, I took a ride on Gringotts, which is still really fun. That was all I needed on the studio side for the day. The line for the Hogwarts Express then ballooned to over an hour, so I walked back to Islands of Adventure. It was a nice little interlude, and I was prepared to wait in whatever line there was for Hagrid's. The single rider line was closed, and the posted wait was down to 75 minutes. It's still midday, so whatever, let's do this. The long air-conditioned queue was a welcome reprieve from the Florida heat, and the details are great. The line moved along quickly enough, and the theme kept me entertained. Before long, it was time to board one of those magical motorbikes for a trip into the Forbidden Forest, with Hagrid doing his best to guide you through the experience.
Don't mind the Thestrals. Dead clever and useful they are. Right, off you go. We'll meet at the edge of the Forbidden Forest.
Out of the station, the ride hits the throttle. The onboard audio is top-notch with the motorcycle sounds and Hagrid's narration. After narrowly missing being blasted by a Scroot, the ride charges ahead and around a high bank turn, and you kinda duel with the train that launched behind you, in about the same location as dueling dragons opposing vertical loops. This is a great tribute to the ride that first occupied this location. Then Hagrid's kicks it into high gear, and after passing Fluffy, the real fun begins. I had completely forgotten about the backwards section and the drop track in the Devil's Snare. Both are performed flawlessly and are so much fun. Then you fly out of the drop track with another strong launch, twist through a few more turns, and then end the ride passing a pair of unicorns. Suffice it to say, for the second time this day, my expectations were beyond exceeded. Hagrid's is an outstanding experience. The story and execution are nothing short of perfection. This was verboten to the 10th power. It's not super intense, but it's absolutely pure fun. I loved this ride, and I left with a huge smile on my face. I would get one more ride each on VelociCoaster and Hagrid's that day. Those two rides complement each other so well. Dueling Dragons was great, but I think the highly themed experience of Hagrid's plus the all-out rush of VelociCoaster leave Islands of Adventure in a better place than if the dragons had remained. I left the park that day with my coaster enthusiast flame no longer smoldering, but fully reignited. This trip was an accelerant, and there was one more coaster in Florida that would ultimately pour gasoline on the blaze and lead me to put that big road trip I've been talking about together. After being delayed twice, Busch Gardens finally announced that Iron Gwazi would open in March of 2022. The first week in April, my family planned to meet up in Lakeland, Florida for the Sun and Fun Air Show. My brother is a pilot, and I've always loved aviation, so any chance to see him and watch the Air Force Thunderbirds is a treat well worth the drive. I plan to visit to Busch Gardens, Tampa before going to the air show. I would have loved for my brother to join me to ride Iron Gwazi for the first time, but he was working the air show that day. I arrived at Busch Gardens to moderate crowds. This was still the height of spring break in Florida when pretty much everything is busy. Iron Gwazi's wait time was posted at 90 minutes. I had just driven almost 4 hours because of traffic, and I just wanted to get on a ride to start off the day, so I headed to Tigris, the new for 2019 premier launched coaster, just like Tempesto in Williamsburg. The wait was 45 minutes, so I hightailed it to the back of the park and walked on to Kumba for two rides, one in the front and one in the back. The nostalgia of this coaster is so special. Every time I ride, I can't help but go back to when I first experienced this layout and that perfect zero-G roll. The ride was running two trains despite having no line, and being freshly painted, it looks and rides great. I headed back towards the middle of the park. Shikra had a 45-minute wait, and I decided to skip that since I had marathoned it so many times over the last years. Tigris was down to a 20-minute wait, so I took a quick spin on her and enjoyed this ride just as much as Tempesto. These are fun little coasters with solid launches, airtime, and hang time. With a couple of rides under my belt for the day, it was time to wait as long as necessary to finally get on Iron Gwazi. The posted wait time was down to 45 minutes. I'd been waiting 3 years to ride this, so what's a few more minutes? While the original Gwazi station was preserved, the queue was completely revamped. Theming is minimal at best. The original Gwazi was themed to a lion and a tiger, and Iron Gwazi would be themed to a crocodile. And there are some cool facts about the reptiles posted throughout. Everything looks clean and fresh. While in line, I waited along with a young man who was in town for a wedding. He told me his friend is one of those crazy roller coaster people, the kind that knows everything about every ride and who told him that he couldn't visit Tampa without riding Iron Gwazi, potentially the best coaster in the world. I replied that I was one of those people too, and it was fun passing the time explaining the whole story of Iron Gwazi and RMC to him. Similar to when Velocicoaster opened, YouTube was buzzing about this ride. Fans were already talking about whether this was better than Steel Vengeance at Cedar Point. Iron Gwazi would clock in at 1,700 feet shorter, with a ride time 40 seconds less than Steel Vengeance, yet it took the hybrid coaster record for height by 1 foot, speed by 2 miles an hour, and steepness by 1 degree. That's marketing for you. The other hot topic was whether Iron Gwazi or Velocicoaster was the better ride in Florida, and which had the best signature element, the Mosasaurus roll or the Death Roll, Iron Gwazi's barrel roll downdrop that's basically the same as Twisted Timber's first drop, but taken at high speed. It mimics the motion of a crocodile inverting its prey after it first catches it in its jaws, and it looks absolutely bonkers. We finally reached the load station, and while they were assigning seats, I politely requested the back, which was granted. My new friend and I boarded the last row, and then something was up. We were asked to get out of the train and step back onto the platform. There was a technical issue. Really? My first ride on Iron Gwazi would be delayed again? Fortunately, they only had to send both trains around the track empty one time. I guess this was common at the time of ride opening. We sat down in the back row again and lowered the lap bar. RMC loves to throw a couple little hits at riders between the station and the lift, and in the back row on Iron Gwazi, you actually get a little pull off that first hump. Then it's into another obnoxiously loud lift hill. The views of the surrounding park are amazing. You can even see Tampa Bay off in the distance. The lift hill slows, and the front of the train starts to fall. 1 minute, 40 seconds, 4,700 feet, a death roll, zero-g stall, and 2 wave turns later, Iron Gwazi careened into the brakes. Oh wow, the first drop may be the best on any roller coaster I've ridden, especially with the head chopper going through the supports. The Outer Banks second hill packs a wallop of sustained ejector airtime. Then there's the death roll. Are you sure that wasn't 2 inversions? Or maybe 3? It happened so quickly. While the death roll was cool, the ride's best element by far was the wave turn over the station. I've never experienced sideways airtime like that before. That moment alone was magical. The second half of the ride is pure fun. Ejector airtime on snappy transitions, and that final larger-than-expected hill launches you out of your seat before the ride banks hard left and into the brakes. Impossibly high expectations met. Iron Gwazi is now my strong number 2 roller coaster after Velocicoaster. To say that my expectations were met is a phenomenal compliment for this ride, because after 3 years they were so high. It absolutely delivers. What I really appreciated too is that unlike the ending of Twisted Timbers, there were none of those almost annoying jerky little twisted airtime pops that just throw you up and down into the restraint without really doing much. Everything on Iron Gwazi was smooth, forceful, and sustained. Every element was flawlessly executed. There was nothing just there. This was 100% intensity from start to finish. Compared to Twisted Timbers, this was a more grown-up RMC. It didn't need to throw all that silly little stuff at you. The ride was big, the elements were all strong, and it was so much fun. I would go on to ride Montu and Cheetah Hunt before getting back for a second ride on Iron Gwazi. I have to say, now that Busch Gardens has an all-out airtime machine, I enjoyed the rest of the park so much more because I wasn't looking for that sensation on other rides. I like Cheetah Hunt more than ever before because I enjoyed it for what it is rather than wishing that it was more intense. I left Busch Gardens that day with a feeling similar to when I left Lake Compounce back in 2002, when I was relishing in New England's phenomenal 1-2 punch of Superman Ride of Steel and Boulder Dash. My new home state of Florida, always known for theme parks and attractions, is now home to two of the best roller coasters in the world in Velocicoaster and Iron Gwazi. We also have Mako, and Hagrid's, and Cheetah Hunt, and the rest of the solid B&Ms to round out our lineup. So, where do I go from here? It was rapidly coming time to plan my first vacation since the pandemic. If you know me, you know that I always joke about never leaving my bubble, the area close to home that has pretty much everything I need within a short drive. From a roller coaster standpoint, I really wanted to get out of the bubble, broaden my horizons, get on some more rides that just might give my new top two a run for their money. It was time to plan that epic road trip I've been talking about since I started this podcast. So, heading into the road trip, Here's my list of top 10 roller coasters. I want to document this now because I'm sure it's going to change a lot. This was kind of tough to put together because I haven't ridden many of these rides in years, and I'm just doing my best based on my memories of them. My track record currently sits at 93, and these are my top 10 rides. Number 10 is Sheikra. Sure, it's a one-trick pony, but it does that one trick really well. And who doesn't love a vertical drop? Plus, when riding in the back row left, you get some great whip through the Immelmann. Number 9 is Montu. This is my favorite B&M invert. It's forceful and whippy, especially in the back. To this day, it's still butter smooth. The first drop is strong, and the forces in the batwing are outstanding. Number 8 is Boulder Dash at Lake Compounds. This wooden roller coaster has the most unbelievable setting on the mountainside, and its layout is filled with strong laterals and floater airtime. Number 7 is Twisted Timbers at King's Dominion. My first RMC, I loved the first half of this ride. It has great airtime and introduced me to what RMC is capable of. I didn't care for the choppy airtime moments in its finale, but it broke so many rules for me, how could I not love it? Number 6 is Mako at SeaWorld Orlando. This ride renewed my faith in B&M Hypers after disappointing rides on Nitro and to a lesser degree Apollo's Chariot. The airtime is strong and it has some very whippy transitions. Number 5 is Superman Ride of Steel at Six Flags New England. Notice I do not call it Bizarro or Superman the Ride. That's because I've not ridden this roller coaster since 2005. I haven't been on it since they replaced the trains and added the new restraints. I'm just going off what I remember from my initial rides on this coaster. I hope to get back up to New England to ride it again soon. Number 4 is Intimidator 305 at King's Dominion. This powerhouse giga coaster is so intense. The first drop is amazing, and the crazy transitions are like nothing I've ever experienced. It's got some airtime, but that's not really the point. This coaster is all about intense turns and positive Gs, and it's a complete rush every time. Number 3 is El Toro at Six Flags Great Adventure. This exquisite, intimate prefab wood coaster has some of the most powerful and sustained airtime I've ever experienced. It's so smooth and such a beautiful ride to look at, it absolutely took my breath away. Then of course, Iron Gwazi is my number 2, and Velocicoaster is my number 1. This was a tough choice. It may change. Velocicoaster has it all for me. It has launches, big drops, and airtime in every possible way, shape, and form. I think it's the way the ride keeps getting better with each element that really has me so high on it. Plus, the immersive theme and location next to the water gives it just that little edge. So I sat down with some ideas for what would be the perfect road trip, opened an Excel spreadsheet, and mapped out an itinerary that I could do in a week. I would be putting in some serious windshield time for sure, but I would get to visit 4 parks with some of the best roller coasters in the eastern United States. I hope to add over 30 new roller coasters to my track record, and I was beyond excited to embark on this journey. My first stop would be Carowinds. Obviously, the big draw here is Fury 325. Now, I had the opportunity to visit this park back in 2018 with my brother, but we chose King's Dominion instead. Now, after having ridden Mako, a B&M hyper that actually delivered, I really wanted to see what all the hype was about concerning Fury. Plus, Copperhead Strike looks fun. I've never done a mock ride like that. Then there are Intimidator and Afterburn. Not a shabby main lineup. Next would be my return to Cedar Point. Sure, I had been back in 1999, but I had missed Millennium Force by a year. Not to mention their other editions of Maverick, Gatekeeper, Valraven, and of course Steel Vengeance. Those were too many major roller coasters to have missed. Unfortunately, I would end up completely missing out on Wicked Twister, which was removed, and Top Thrill Dragster would be closed for the 2022 season. Still, getting back to America's roller coaster was an absolute must for me. And of course, I couldn't visit Ohio without stopping a few hours down the road at Kings Island. They have the newly opened Orion Giga, of course the legendary Beast, and its new next-door neighbor, Mystic Timbers. Add the Banshee B&M Invert, the Diamondback Hyper, and the park's 50th anniversary celebration, and there are more than enough reasons to visit. Then last and definitely not least, I would head to the Smoky Mountains to visit Dollywood. This park looks stunningly beautiful, and they have a very unique collection of roller coasters. First and foremost is Lightning Rod, the only launched RMC, and a ride I really wanted to experience. Then there's Wild Eagle, the B&M wing coaster set atop a mountain, GCI's Thunderhead Wood Twister, the highly themed Mystery Mine and Fire Chaser Express, and the last Aero Looper ever built, Tennessee Tornado. After this trip, I'll be able to say I've ridden all 4 Giga Coasters in the US, and I would add 2 more of the best RMCs, 2 great GCIs, and so many other unique rides to my record. So I bought my Cedar Fair Platinum Pass, my one-day Dollywood ticket, and made all my hotel reservations. Oil changed in my car, bags packed, Google Maps on standby, and a ton of podcasts in my queue. I set out on a 2,700-mile journey across beautiful country to start to tackle my roller coaster bucket list. Join me as I give you my first time, in-depth reactions to the best rides at all of these incredible parks, beginning with Carowinds, next time on Coaster Redux. That's a wrap for this episode. If you enjoyed it, please help me out by reviewing, sharing, and subscribing. You can also follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Coaster Redux.
Thank you for listening to Coaster Redux. Until next time, enjoy the ride.